MacCast, Monday, February 25th, 2013. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, you know, I might have a little bit of sad news because I am not sure how much longer I will be doing the MacCast for you. You know, in case you haven't heard, Apple stock is in the toilet. It's on the decline. The company is doomed. Ever since Steve Jobs has been gone, Tim Cook hasn't seemed to have the ability to innovate. They're losing ground to competitors like Google and Android and the other lower cost devices, smartphones and tablets that are coming out on the market. They've really lost their way, and they just might not be around that much longer. Okay, of course, I am kidding. I am completely kidding, but it is the genesis, that sort of sentiment and attitude from some segments of the media is the thing that we're going to be talking about on today's episode. I've gotten a little bit kind of fed up with some of the reporting, some of the stuff that's been going on with respect to Apple and their current position, some of the things that are being said. It's gotten a little bit crazy, frankly, in my opinion. And, you know, when that happens, I like to hope and think that I can step back from my own fandom, fanaticism, whatever you want to call it. You know I love Apple, right? And I don't think it's going away anytime soon. And I know that they know how to innovate and create great products and that really not much has changed. But I do like to think that there's other smart people out there and that maybe I can step back and try and understand where some of this sentiment, some of this information, some of this reporting is coming from. And so in order to do that, one of the best ways I know how to do that is to get a couple of other really smart people, people that I respect, in the room and just talk about some of the things that are being said and gain some various perspectives on what we think is going on. So I invited my friends Dave Sparks, Mac Sparky from Mac Power Users, also author of the Mac Sparky Field Guide. It's great. Ebooks, iBooks that you can get on the Apple iBooks store. So check those out. Invited Dave over along with Ken Ray from Mac OS Ken to just talk through some of the things that are being thrown around out there and get their take on what's happening. And I think come the end of this, you're going to have at least more information, some of our feelings on it, and maybe some things that you can go share with your maybe not as technical, not as Apple-loving, Apple-following folks. Because if you're like me, what happens is inevitably you get your friends and your family, people who know that you're into Apple and into Macs and iOS devices and stuff like that. You'll get some of those people come up and say things like, oh, I hear Apple's really in trouble. Oh, hey, I saw that Apple stock has been sliding. I guess there's, you know, something bad's going to happen. And you can maybe have some information and some ammunition to get them away from a lot of the media hype and more in a place of better understanding of actually what's going on and help them realize that, no, Apple is stronger than ever and is going to be doing just fine. So we'll get into all of that in just a minute. But before we get started, I do want to take a moment and thank a couple of our show sponsors. First one being GoToMeeting by Citrix. You know, working as a team, successful teamwork is very important to running a successful business. And just like we're about to do in this episode, you can work more effectively often as a team when you're meeting, when you're talking face to face, when you're discussing ideas and concepts and the things that you're working on. But more and more these days, you have your clients, you have your coworkers spread out in different places, you're working remotely, you're on the go. And it can get more and more difficult to actually sit down and have a face-to-face meeting to get everybody in a single place. And that's why GoToMeeting is such a valuable tool. When you use something like GoToMeeting with HD Faces, it gives you a very powerful and simple way to meet and collaborate, but you do it all online. So wherever you are, wherever you need to get together, you can use GoToMeeting as a tool to make that happen. And what's awesome is they make it so easy. With GoToMeeting, all it takes is a click, literally a click, and you can be sharing your screen. You can be working on documents together in real time. You have the webcam available, so you get to see everybody in HD with HD video, and it really becomes just like meeting in person. So it's easy to launch a meeting and join a meeting from wherever you are, using your computer, using your phone, using your tablet. You can even present from your iPad, so it truly is mobile. And when you think about a team of people, it doesn't even have to be a large company. For example, I work for myself as a web developer, and my team involves myself and my clients and my business partners, the people who provide services for me. And I very often need to meet with them. So I use GoToMeeting to, say, train my customers after I've delivered them a website, say something with WordPress. I need to be able to show them how to use those tools. So I can use a tool like GoToMeeting. We can have high definition video. We can see each other and I can share my screen. I can show them how to work through the process and train them. And for me and my business, that becomes really valuable because it's a tool and it's something that I have in my arsenal to set me apart and something that my clients and customers really enjoy and benefit from. So I want you to give GoToMeeting a try. You can try it free for 30 days. Don't wait. Just use this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button and use the promo code MACCAST, M-A-C-C-A-S-T. Be sure to use the promo code MACCAST and you'll get a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting, meeting is believing. And I'd also like to thank Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You know, if you were like me, like how I used to be with projects and stuff like that, I would be working on things and I would be getting information coming in. I'd be gathering research. I'd been doing things. I'd be putting bookmarks or web clippings together for something I was working on. I'd have little sticky notes. I'd have little text files and notes in different places, maybe something that I put into my iPhone, you know, wherever it might be. I'd have to-do lists in different places. I would have email coming in for different projects. I'd try to organize that in folders inside mail. And inevitably, things would just be scattered all over my computer. And so what you really need when you're working on a project is you need some sort of system to aggregate and get all of that stuff together. And Notebook is a great tool for making that happen because it works just like your old school physical paper notebooks. This is how we used to do it before we had computers, right? You would have a notebook, you'd have separate pages and sections for the project you're working on, different bits of information, you'd have tabs, you'd have ways to organize that stuff. And you can do all of that with Notebook and more because it's digital. You get not only the advantages of doing the different organization, but you can have all of that information then indexed and cross-referenced. You can have links back to information. So if you put in an email, you can have links back to the information that's in the email, where it came from, which email it's from. You can jump back. If you're putting contacts in there, it links back to your contact records so you can view phone numbers and additional contact information right inside Notebook. And Notebook allows you to insert other documents. You can put in images. You can put in PDFs. You can put in Word docs. Anything that you need to reference within your project, you can organize it all in Notebook and then get back to it wherever it is on your computer. So you have one place to go to get your stuff organized, to take your notes, to put it all together. And then all of that is searchable. It's indexed. You can find it. And it really makes bringing all of the stuff in your projects together easy to do, and it does it in a metaphor, in a way that just makes sense. So I want you to check it out. I want you to try it out. You can get a free trial of Notebook. Just go to circusponies.com. Try it free for 30 days, and I think you're going to be very impressed and enjoy the software. And a big thank you to Circus Ponies and Citrix for their support of the MacCast. So let's get into our discussion, my conversation with Ken Ray and David Sparks about some of the things that have been going on in the Apple media, some of the things that have been being said about Apple and their future. And let's find out once and for all if Apple's really doomed and whether or not there will continue to be a MacCast in the future. Well, hey, Ken, welcome to the MacCast once again. It's been a while.
Has it?
A little while, I think. Yeah.
Thanks. Well, thanks for having me. Whether it has been or not, I appreciate being asked.
We were just talking beforehand. We missed you at Macworld this year. So
I also missed me at Macworld. Thank you. I missed everybody too. So thanks.
Many a person asked about you. So we're glad you're feeling better and are able to come on the show. And I guess it's been a while now, but
yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And Dave Sparks. Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Great. How are you, Adam?
I'm hanging in there. I got both of you on here, though, because I, maybe like you, maybe not like you, and we're going to find out, had been sort of getting frustrated, I don't think is necessarily the word, but just a little irritated by what's been going on in some of the Mac news lately, or more, I guess, in the analysis by certain outlets, certain sources and things like that, calling Apple out to a certain degree. I don't know how to put this. I don't know exactly the right words to say this, but basically people saying that Apple is flailing. We've had the whole stock thing, trying to make sense of why the stock's going down and sort of putting blame more or less on, I think, Tim Cook and what's happening at Apple, or over them not, I guess, rushing out the next big thing fast enough. Is that a good analysis of what's going on? Or I guess there's a lot of angles to this that people are taking, but the end result is that Apple's not doing what Apple should be doing, and it's going to hell in a handbasket. Right, we're doomed.
This is the official Chicken Little episode of the MacCast.
Exactly, the sky. That's a good way to put it. It feels, you know, on some days like people are saying the sky is falling, and it just seems like this huge, gross overreaction. And I don't know where it comes from, and I'm seeing it even creep into people who I think generally should know better or be more aware. I don't know. How do you guys feel about this stuff?
I can tell you that in my daily life, you know, as word gets around that I've got this alter ego of Max Sparky, you know, people who I deal with in my day job who really have no clue about any of this stuff, it seems to have permeated to that level at this point where they'll come to me and say, boy, it looks like your Apple's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of sentiment and thing that I'm getting that at.
My first reply is always, it's not my Apple, because if it was, I would not be working here. And secondly, it's not. You're okay. It is interesting. I think it's kind of like in my day job, I'm an attorney, and once in a while, I get involved with a case that actually does involve press. And I really love my friends who work as professional reporters, but I have to say that every time I've known the inside story of something that got covered in the press, the coverage was never really exactly what was going on, and usually it's a bare glimmer of what it actually is. So I think to a certain extent this is just people trying to make mountains out of molehills. But there's another level to this, that it's like it's a story, you know, Apple comes from behind and becomes the biggest publicly traded company on the planet. I know they were at one point. I don't know if they still are or not.
I don't think currently, no.
Yeah, but you know, they're always up there now. And then the question becomes, well, now let's talk about their fall from grace. And Steve's gone, and you know, they haven't made something that, you know, revolutionized the entire world in 3 years, so therefore sell.
I read an interesting article the other day. I mean, as far as the stock price, I read an interesting article, I guess it was yesterday. I didn't do it on macOS 10 because pretty much all it would do is confirm what we've all thought, which is that financial analysts, a lot of them, don't actually know what they're talking about. But there was a study. I can't remember who did it now, so I wish I had the article in front of me. I apologize. But basically said that once Apple started falling apart in September for the first 3 weeks, and let's back up even from that. We all remember when Apple went from $200 to $78, and I believe it was 2006, right? 2006, 2007. And so to say that, you know, Apple fell apart and it's down to $450 seems crazy for all of us. And I mean, certainly 78 is not the lowest it's been, but I mean, Apple went on a tear up to 200, I think 203, and then fell fairly quickly back to 78. And so now to say, you know, 450 sucks is kind of a funny thing. But when Apple started to fall apart in September, when their share price started to fall apart in September, you had a bunch of analysts actually doubled down. And the reason that they actually upped their estimates was because theoretically it was because they were looking at Apple and saying, okay, well, here's what's true about Apple and here's what we know and here's how many they sold. And so for all of these good reasons, this is why Apple is good. Although this university that just did the study said basically what they were doing at that point was trying to justify their position up to that point. And that historically, this is something that analysts do. Like if they run like a full head of steam up a hill and the stock starts to fall apart, it's almost like they're now willing it to go back higher. Okay. So then when Apple shares decidedly are falling apart and the analysts realize, even sensibly, I mean, who was it? I can't remember who the one recently. God, I'm forgetting everything now. Whoever it was that had their share price at $1,111, he finally backed off that the other day. And the thing is, he doesn't believe anything different about Apple than he believed before. The only problem is he thought he could see them getting to $1,111 from $700.
Right.
In 12 months. You can't see them getting to $1,100 from $450 in 12 months.
Right.
But, okay, so then all of these guys look at where the stock is realistically, and they say, okay, well now, okay, even if I believe everything that I believed about Apple before, my price point is now too high. And so they'll go ahead and they'll pull back on you know, their target price, and that will generate another wave of selling. So nobody's listening to them when they say that it's going to be awesome, or at least not everybody's listening to them when they say it's going to be awesome. But as soon as they start like sounding negative, and then people look at the stock and see, oh, well, it has been trending down. Oh, and now these people say it's down too. You know, then all of a sudden you're just selling to beat the band in a really crazy way. Then it seems like happens with a lot of other stocks because no other stocks are rock stars the way Apple really, I mean, became a rock star over the past 10 or 12 years. Which is like, you know, and we can go into why that might be. I was talking to Tom Merritt last week about why it is everybody thinks that they know how to run Apple. Nobody knows how to run Exxon. You won't stand, you know, you won't sit in the Starbucks and have anybody say, well, you know what Exxon needs to do.
Yeah. Or even, you know, Samsung.
Right. Well, because Samsung's copying Apple. Apparently that's a good business model. Copy Apple, but, you know, even
that's
though
always been a good business model.
Even though Apple is being run wrong.
Yeah.
Talking to Tom Merritt, we were trying to figure out if maybe it's the ubiquity of Apple. Maybe it's the closeness with Apple devices that we have. I, right now, sitting here talking to you, have an Apple device in my pocket because that's where I keep my iPhone. I am in my house, but all day long, my iPhone is next to me. It's in my pocket. I might even be using my iPad, which is right in front of me. Maybe it's the familiarity. Maybe it's the ubiquity. Maybe it's the closeness that we have with our Apple stuff that suddenly everybody thinks, you know, that they know what they should be doing. And certainly it could be the reason that everybody, you know, then keeps up with it. I talked to my dad, who doesn't seem to me keeps up with current events, like regular current events doesn't seem to me he keeps up with. But he told me that after the last earnings call that looked like Apple was in trouble. Okay. Really?
Wow. Yeah. And so all this is going on, and what happens to me is I start, you know, reading and parsing through it and going, well, that's based on what I know or what I think I know that sounds crazy and insane, what's going on. But then sometimes I try and detach myself from it so I can maybe understand it better, and I try and step back and think, well, okay, let's assume there's some validity to this, just for the sake of argument, just so I can get myself out of my mindset and sort of figure out, okay, is this a real thing? Where is this coming from? And that's a little bit of what I'm hoping we can kind of get into, is sort of break this down for people. And so part of the one of the first things that I did when I started thinking about this was I thought, okay, a lot of people are levying this claim that Apple is somehow slowed their pace of innovation, or they're not innovating quickly enough, or they don't have that next big thing in the pipeline. And so you guys see in the notes, I made this little timeline, and I just sort of, I went, okay, let's just look at hardware. Let's leave software out of it. And let's just look at hardware and see where the big milestones are. And this is, of course, in my mind. So I was trying to just map out, and people might argue that there are extra ones. But I started with the Apple One and Two, which was like 1976, 1977. And then I did the Macintosh, which was 84. And then I threw the Newton in there. You can argue either way, but I think the Newton ultimately led to, you know, the iPhone and Palm and other things that were copied. So I think it was pretty revolutionary at the time. And then PowerPC, which was 94, the iMac in 98, the iPod in 2001, the iPhone 2007, and then the iPad 2010, right? And so I made out this timeline, and I'm looking at it, and I'm going, well, okay, so by my count, that shows that Apple releases some sort of innovative or potentially disruptive product every 3 to 7 years has been their pace. And people are calling them out now, and like Dave, I think you said it earlier, it's been 3 years since the iPad. So is this is this because people are just expecting now technology has advanced to this place where we have to iterate faster?
Well, you know, I would contest your timeline, Adam, because I think, you know, the Apple One and Two were very innovative computers, and then the Macintosh was a big leap forward,
right?
But then after that, Apple made computers, and they made Macs, and
yep.
You know, they may have changed the chip inside of it, and the operating system got better. The iMac is really a revisioning of the original Mac. I don't think any of that stuff is ground-shaking, like, in the same category that iPod, iPhone, and iPad are.
Well, I think the iMac for sure, because, I mean, it was another one of these situations where everybody rushed to copy what was happening with that device. We can leave maybe the middle stuff out. But I think the Mac to the iMac was a huge change. I don't know.
Well, I would also, if you're going to leave PowerPC in there, then I would say the switch to Intel in 2005.
Yeah, I thought about putting that in there as well.
I would say that might even be a bigger deal. Well, I don't know if it's a bigger deal than PowerPC, but it's a big deal. Because suddenly all these people who thought, well, I can't do that because I run Microsoft stuff, and then Apple, you know, puts Intel inside the Mac, and all of a sudden you can do all your Windows stuff if you want to, but here, go ahead and buy this anyway. I think the iMac is very important, though, because one of my favorite commercials that Apple has ever done ever is the one with Jeff Goldblum talking about, you know, the beige boxes and beige. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's very nice, you know, and you know, what are these people in thinking jail is actually one of my favorite lines ever. But I mean, it really did, you know, focus people on the idea that this is not just this doesn't have to just be a tool. It can be more than that, that, you know, the style actually can weigh in and maybe should weigh in. So I would definitely say the iMac was that important as well. I think, though, if I may, to try to hit your question, Adam, I mean, part of the problem is we get a new phone from Samsung every 3 months. And it's not just Samsung. I mean, there are other people as well. But I mean, seriously, we're getting a new phone from Samsung constantly now. What's funny to me is none of those phones really seem to be that different than the phone before it, but they're just cranking them out.
Right.
And Apple, on the other hand, tends to get beaten up if the next version of their phone does not walk on water.
Right. If they try and do the same thing, they're not innovating. They're not being Apple.
Right. It's that whole evolutionary, not revolutionary thing that people seem to say with a sneer, as if, you know, as evolution is easy. But I guess if you're only going to do that once a year, maybe that's why people seem to sort of go, well, you know, I wanted it to fly or, you know, something that would be completely unexpected. And yet, well, I mean, that's part of the deal, though. I mean, they tended to introduce things that Well, the iPod wasn't that much when it came out, though, was it? I mean, it became this really amazing cultural thing, but the first time it came out, most of the country was like, eh, okay.
Well,
too expensive, everybody thought.
Well, that was a thing, but I mean, the thing was, you got to remember, MP3 players at the time, you could get like 12 songs on them.
Yeah.
Right?
But the other thing you have to remember is most people didn't see the need for an MP3 player at the time. I mean, honestly.
Well, true.
I, at that point, I had moved from San Francisco to Oklahoma City. I did not commute. I drove, which is a commute. But I mean, I didn't, you know, I didn't walk a city. I didn't work in the, you know,
right.
I didn't ride a subway. I didn't do any of that stuff. And so for me, I just tried to think about why would I need that or want it? And at the time, there was absolutely no reason for me to need or want it at the price that it, you know, at the price that it was coming in at. We didn't see the shift coming at the time, or I didn't see the shift coming at the time.
Well, it didn't until they had iTunes, right? And you could rip your CDs.
Well,
right. That Apple kind of created that. I think they recognized that to a certain degree, which is why they bought SoundJam and made iTunes.
So, but I mean, the iPod was not revolutionary when it came out. It was interesting when it came out. We didn't see, I mean, you know, that was, we didn't see the world changing the day the iPod was introduced, right?
Maybe not, but it certainly changed the rules of the game for everybody that was in that space at the time. I mean, prior to the iPod, you had the Creative was the big thing, the Creative jukebox. It looked like a CD player. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, it looked like a Discman. It didn't even have a different design, right? It was just solid state, and it had, you know, could hold, I forget how many songs. It was, you know, more than most, but it definitely wasn't the iPod level. So, you know, and it's like a classic thing. Every MP3 player before the iPod and every MP3 player after the iPod was, you know, a completely different entity and in a different direction. So it certainly changed it. I don't think any of these changes come overnight. I mean, the iPhone, when it came out, how long did it take before the people were able to copy it? It was at least a year or two.
Yeah.
Before we started seeing clones.
But, you know, just think about that for a minute. When each one of these new products comes out, and in particular, I'm thinking about the iPod, the iPhone, and the iPad, a lot of people were not impressed with the original release of the product. I remember the day the iPad was announced, I thought it was going to be amazing. And by and large, the general press coverage was, you know, just a big iPod Touch.
Yep.
You know? And yes, then the iPhone, all we heard about was it didn't have a removable battery and it didn't have a physical keyboard. I mean, Apple
didn't have apps.
Apple doesn't create an entirely new product category. In each one of these instances, they went to an existing market and, you know, applied their unicorn tears to it and came up with something different. And it was the general, you know, market that picked up on it was the number of people that bought iPads and iPods and iPhones that made it a success. It wasn't any kind of general industry recognition or bowing down to the superiority of this new product they announced. It was the market. I don't know. I just think this is all a big boogeyman. I don't think that it matters if they come out with a new product next month or next year. I like to think about Walt Disney. You know, when he started out, he made animated cartoons. And at some point, he started making animated movies. And then at some point, he started making theme parks. And if you look at his life, he came up with like new industries he'd get into. And Apple's done that with their products. And let's just forget for the minute what they've done to the music industry. But, you know, Disney hasn't come up with a new thing like theme parks in how long? 60 years, you know? But it's okay. They're still doing okay, you know? And I don't think Apple's just going to stop innovating. I think they're going to figure out how to apply their knowledge of hardware and software to the next great thing. But I don't think they're necessarily going to lead the way. I hope they don't. I just hope that when they show up, they'll show up with something that just solves the problem.
Yeah. What I'm trying to decipher is where did we suddenly get this feeling or idea that innovation happens overnight? You know, like Apple has a giant innovation machine and they just go, you know, punch a button and something spits out. Yeah.
It seems to me that a lot of it started showing up when people started saying, okay, well, Tim's been around now for a year or however long he's been.
Really 2 years longer. Yeah,
well, but either way, you know, since Steve died, there's a lot of discussions about his performance, and there's always this footnote, but he hasn't, you know, given us the amazing magic show yet. That's one context of it that I
see. Well, yeah, and I'm saying, but it's been not even, you know, barely 3 years since we got the iPad.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to rationalize it. I think it's kind of silly, but, you know, whatever.
You know, I don't see anybody else. I guess I don't see anybody else innovating is another thing. It's like, it seems like everybody, the part of the frustration, I think, comes from people going, well, we want Apple to make the next great thing so that we can start copying it. And we can get into that game because we don't know what the game is going to be until Apple tells us what the game is.
Yeah. I guess one of the things I'm wondering is like what, I don't know. It still feels to me like it goes back to the fact that there are new copycat things coming out every few months. I mean, we expect something. I don't know. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure that it just has to do with Tim Cook not having. I think the same would have been. I think we would be saying the same thing if we were now 3 years out and Steve Jobs were still there.
I tend to agree with you. I think people might still be saying the same thing, and I still think even in that context, it's a little bit crazy. And the other thing that's weird that's going on now is there seems to be this preemptive, a few people trying to do these preemptive things, thinking about what Apple might be doing, like the watch or the television or stuff like that. And you're starting to see some of the competition thinking they can maybe get out ahead of the game, but nothing's really stuck and nothing's really been that revolutionary. And nobody seems to be calling those folks to task saying, well, you've just, you know, iterated on the TV and you put a chip in there and made it a little smarter and put apps on there, but it doesn't really change television or a watch. I mean, the Pebble seems like a promising smartwatch device, but, you know, that is just hitting the streets now, so we'll have to kind of see where that goes. But that does feel a little bit like, well, if Apple's getting into these smart devices, you know, what are they going to get into, and can we get ahead of them? The interesting thing about what's going on there is it seems like people still don't get it, and they're trying to rush these products out, and that's just something that Apple doesn't do. Tim said in a recent interview, you know, they were asked about this sort of thing, you know, Apple getting products to market. And he just said, you know, we the one thing we will never do is make a crappy product. And I think people just are forgetting and not understanding that it takes time to not make a crappy product. It's easy to get an idea and just throw something out there and see if it sticks. And that seems what Apple's competition does quite frequently. But the thing that everybody wants from Apple is for them to not do that. Yet now there's all this pressure that, well, you got to get this next thing out.
You know, there's a couple things there. First, I think you're right. I don't think they're going to make something. They're not going to release an iWatch just because everybody's writing that they need to release a product. I mean, I think they're going to release an iWatch if they think they can bring something that talks to their product line, that, you know, that tells the story that Apple's trying to tell. And I'm not convinced they're going to do that. I mean, so long as I've got this great iPhone, for right now, I'm happy. You know, maybe in 4 or 5 years, everybody's going to have like a belt they wear that's their smartwatch, and it talks to them through a neural implant, and it does, you know, whatever. It creates holographic clothing, you know. So at some point, that, you know, the technology is going to go beyond something you stick in your pocket, and maybe it'll be something you put on your wrist. I'm not convinced of that, but it'll go somewhere, and I think Apple will be right there. They probably won't be the first ones to release a product like that, but if the company maintains the culture that it currently has, when they do release something, it's going to be really great.
Yeah.
I don't worry about this stuff at all. And, you know, frankly, when, you know, people who don't follow this stuff that close walk up to me and ask me the question about it, I tell them that they're, you know, they don't need to worry about it. It's not worth getting hung
but,
up.
But
on,
why?
You know?
I mean, I guess that's what I want to get at is why do we tell these people, you know what, you don't need to worry about this stuff? Because it's sort of like we know because we analyze it. Like I said, I kind of stepped back from this and started looking at, okay, what is the reality of this? Who is doing something differently? How frequently does Apple innovate their products? How, you know, I try and understand it, and I'm hoping to be able to share that with people. So, you know, what do you tell them to say, look, this is Chicken Little running through the thing saying the sky is falling, and it's really just kind of crazy.
Well, forgive me. I'm having trouble putting – there's this idea that's sort of like at the top of my head, and I cannot quite like catch it and put it into words. So if I stumble through this, I apologize.
Don't, because that's exactly – I mean, you heard me at the top of this episode. This is what I've been struggling with as well. So this is what we're working through or hoping to work through here.
Okay. Jobs' whole thing about not asking people what they want but telling them what they want before they even realize that it's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is we're hip to that now. We now know that there's stuff out there that we want, but we don't know what it is. And that's a problem for Apple, or at least it's a problem for perceptions around Apple, because we weren't expecting the iPod. I know you were, because you knew about, you know, Creative or iRiver or, you know, whoever.
Oh, I definitely wasn't expecting the iPod. I would never say that. And okay, I think what you're talking about too, this idea. Just to go back to what you were saying earlier, this why it took a while for the iPod to catch on, because I think it was that past idea where we didn't know what we wanted or why we needed it. We sort of had to, Apple sort of had to put the product out there. And then not only that, they had to show people why they wanted it,
mm-hmm.
right? You had to train people. Like, this is the thing you want, and here's why.
Sorry. It's fine, please. I had a... What was it called? It was a Sidekick. I had a Sidekick 2 before mm-hmm. the iPhone. The only reason I had it was because I had somebody, Rob Black, with whom I worked, only communicated via text. But I hated texting on those little, like, you know, the 12 key, you know, candy bar phones.
Oh, God, it was awful.
Yeah. So
T9 or whatever they called it.
So I got a Sidekick just because it had the full QWERTY keyboard. But when we first saw the iPhone, I was totally turned on by it. But the reason I was totally turned on by the iPhone was because A, I knew Apple, and B, it was a feature phone. It wasn't technically a smartphone because you couldn't put apps on it. You couldn't program it, which means, I mean, the first iPhone was technically not a smartphone. It was also a feature phone because you couldn't put apps on it unless you jailbroke it, and then it became a whole other thing. Most people didn't see the iPhone coming. Most people didn't have a need for smartphones. The smartest smartphone you could get up to that point was a Windows phone running, what was it called? Windows Mobile,
yep.
I guess, which
yep.
was a crappy operating system.
That was terrible.
It was a great operating system for the time being because you could do so much. And the day after the first iPhone came out, Windows Phone became a crappy operating system. It just was. It was impossible to navigate. The web looked like crap. I mean, even though I couldn't install anything on my iPhone, it was leaps and bounds beyond the Windows Phone. And for a lot of people, the Windows Phone, I guess it was Windows Mobile 6.5, I think may have been the last one. There were probably a lot of people who were using that very well and getting a lot of stuff done with it. But the iPhone just, you know, completely blew it away, completely changed it. And still, I knew so many people who thought that the iPhone was an overpriced toy, that it was silly. I don't need my phone to do that much. All I needed to do was make phone calls. Occasionally, somebody would try to come up with a tablet. I remember being very excited even before the iPhone came out when Microsoft had its Origami event. But I'm mm-hmm. a geek, you know, and the Origami event was terrible. And the iPad came out and people still didn't see why they needed it. I need a computer. I don't need your little toy. I need a computer.
Right.
What do you do on a computer? I check Facebook. I surf the web. You don't need a computer anymore. You need an iPad. This is all of the computer that you need. Finally, with the iPad, people are now hip to the fact that when Apple comes out with something, it is going to change your life for the better. If you're part of it, it's going to change your life for the better. And so now, with Samsung coming out with something every 15 minutes, you know, with tablets that are costing less and maybe they don't do quite as much, but they're, you know, they're less expensive. And plus, you know, for $79, I can get Amazon to bring me everything with my tablet. And, you know, I mean, we're now used to the idea that this stuff can actually change our lives. I still don't know that we take it seriously enough, because we're still playing, by we I mean general consumers, we're still sort of concerned about, we're concerned about price, we're concerned about size, we're concerned about speed, we're concerned about colors. We're not thinking in terms of operating systems. We're not thinking in terms of, you know, whole ecosystems, which is what Apple has been building consistently for the past 12 years, maybe. I mean, if you take iTunes into account. And maybe that's the problem now. Now we are used to, like, when one of these new devices comes out, when one of these new things comes out, it is truly new and it truly changes things. And maybe that's part of the frustration with Apple, is they're keeping these new other devices from these other people, but they're not truly changing things. Right. I mean, they're still going on text and specs, you know? Oh, this has a screen that's 3% brighter than yours. Really? and that's going to make me 3% happier? Probably not.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's what we're looking for now. We're looking to, you know, maybe we're looking for technology to be like a, I don't want to say a savior, but, you know, something that really is going to do something really remarkable for me. And maybe we're bored.
I think you're right. I mean, that's what I was alluding to earlier, right? Everybody's waiting around because nobody else is making the next great thing. If Apple doesn't make it, wow, this is going to get really boring really fast.
Yeah,
right? Because we're just going to keep upping our, this, like you said, this one's just going to have a better Retina screen, and that's going to have, you know, our voice control system is going to be better than your Siri.
Yeah. That's another one, though, that bothers me. I mean, then you get people who, as you mentioned earlier, people who should know better. I hope I don't offend anyone. When I was on MacBreak Weekly, not last time, but the time before, Sarah Lane was complaining about Siri. I'll talk to her. I'm actually going to be doing tech news today, tomorrow. So I'll, you know, I don't hate Sarah. I'm not trying to say anything bad about her, but she was complaining about how bad Siri is. And I was, you know, I was like, you know, I think what I said, and it sort of flew past everybody, but, you know, I think I started talking about how stupid the Kitty Hawk Flyer was. Because it only went like, you know, like the length of a football field, and you couldn't, you know, store things in it, and there was no room for your luggage. God, that was dumb. I cannot believe how upset people get about how little Siri does, because how long ago was it that you couldn't just, you know, say, show me movie times? Because that's really what you can do.
6 months ago?
You don't even have to be nice. I mean, you don't even have to be nice to Siri. You can just pull it out and say, I had it put an interview that I have tomorrow on my calendar. I could have easily typed it in, but you know what was easier? Saying, put my phone call with Ben for noon tomorrow on my calendar. And, you know, and it did. And I don't know what it is about Siri that bothers people so much. I mean, we are,
I love Siri. I've been defending Siri since the beginning. So, and I often feel like I'm the only guy.
No, I absolutely love it. The one thing that I forget is that I can use it sometimes. Although I've started using
That's
it more lately,
problem,
just
yeah.
because I'm like, come on, let's get this thing in gear. Sorry. I feel like it just went, you know, I just, sorry.
No,
that's way left field there.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I guess he actually gives me a good transition to sort of the next thing. So we kind of talked about this idea that, you know, that Apple's not innovating, but then there's a bunch of other things, and I want to jump through these quickly because I want to get to some of the stuff we have here at the end, because I think there are some concerns and some things. And Dave, you wrote a piece for Macworld, and you brought up one of them that I want to get into talking about. But, you know, I think one of the catalysts that set me off this week was the sort of WAS comment about Apple losing its cool guy image. I don't have the exact quote up in front of me, but the essence was, and I think the media blew this out of proportion, and I know Woz hates it when they do this. He was saying, you know, that Apple has had the sort of power to determine the course of consumer electronics, and they've continued to be able to do that with competition growing. And he, you know, he's kind of an Android fan, I know that, and you've got Windows Phone, and he's made some comments recently about some of the innovations happening on the Windows side, and those guys are doing things here and there, right? So I get his point, but I'm not sure. I think Apple's still the cool guy. I think, like we were talking about earlier, everybody's still looking to Apple to do that next big thing. I guess I don't share the concern that somehow someone's going to overtake them, because I'm just not seeing that.
Hey, you know, I would take anything Wass says kind of with a grain of salt. You know, I mean, as sad as that sounds, I mean, we're all thankful for the role he played in making this company that makes these products we love, but he's not been involved for a long time. And I mean, the guy's an engineer and he can get really excited about engineer-y type things on consumer products, but
yeah,
that's not really much of a judge of what general, you know, the 99% of consumers are really interested in.
And, well, yeah.
And I actually, I'll fully confess, I avoided reading any of those pieces. I didn't read any of what he said because my two thoughts were, you know, when's the last time you worked there on a daily basis? And also, as you say, he's an engineer. So he's going to get excited about, you know, what's very innovative, you know, from a very geek side of it, well, which is very much not where Apple has been aiming for the past who knows how many years at this point.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if I should say this. I know of a very well-respected Apple-related publication that has a no Woz policy, that they don't publish anything from Woz.
And, I don't get that. You know, I went in and wanted to read this because, again, I've known how many times sort of what he said has been sort of overblown. And certainly in this case, if you go read the original Bloomberg interview that everybody was talking about, it really was what he was saying in the context of how he was saying it. Mm-hmm. You can understand why he's feeling that way. You know, it was a very benign comment and it got way overblown. And when I actually read the piece, the funny thing is I think that the bigger thing that people should have globbed onto that I think was way out of left field was he said he thinks that Apple needs to open the iTunes ecosystem and let Android and Windows Phone owners use iTunes media management software.
Yeah.
Apple is never going to do that. And that is a bigger thing in that comment. But as far as, you know, Apple losing its cool, I don't think they're going to, but you certainly can step back and kind of say, well, you know, they need to continue to embrace that. And I think they are. That's where the weird part of that came into play is I'm not sure why he feels that they're not, you know, or potentially might not be the cool guy anymore, because I just don't see anybody else. I mean, Microsoft is doing some interesting things. Google's doing some interesting things here and there with Android. Maybe the Google Glass thing. But, you know, by and large, I think everybody's still waiting on Apple to drop the next shoe, which, again, going back to what we talked about earlier, is where I think a lot of this stuff is coming from. And then I don't know who mentioned it, but the other one is this sort of cry from a lot of people that Apple has to compete on price. This goes back probably about a month or so now when people were talking about this cheaper iPhone, right? But this is this long-standing argument. We even brought it up earlier when, you know, the iPod came out. Well, it was too expensive. When the iPhone came out, it was too expensive, right? When Macs came out, they're too expensive. Well, you could argue that, yeah, Apple even agreed. But a heck of a lot of people bought those phones at that price, so...
Oh, yeah, I did. It was too much to spend on a phone, but how am I not going to? You know?
Well, and exactly the point, right, is that Apple has never let price point be a driving feature to what they do. Never. I can't think of any time in history when that happens. And the only time it actually does happen is when a certain product line or line of products reaches a maturity and they've sort of saturated what I consider to be the price points. But even then, when they start to look at how to hit those other segments of the market where they want to expand into, where maybe they haven't been able to reach before because of price point being the issue, they never do it in a way that compromises sort of what Apple is, right? They're not just going to, again, take an iPhone and put a cheap plastic case on it and throw it out there as a cheap phone. And it seems like there's a lot of people calling for that sort of thing. And I don't know where that comes from, because that's just not in Apple's DNA as far as I'm concerned.
Every now and then I wonder if Apple isn't sitting on $137 billion, though, because they're about to do something that is going to totally screw up people's heads. Like, if they started making a cheap plastic iPhone, I'm not saying that any of this is why is that's not why they're holding on to $137 billion or whatever. I mean, the funny thing is right now, Wall Street analysts are calling for Apple to make a cheaper iPhone. And the day that Wall Street introduces a cheaper iPhone, Wall Street is going to say this is really going to hurt Apple's margins.
Right.
Because exactly. It will. Because exactly. It will. I mean, so they are very much in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Now, I only thought of this right now while we're sitting here talking about it. So please forgive me. This is not a fully fleshed out idea. Apple has not competed on price. You're right. And yet, over the past, especially with the tablet, I think I may have mentioned this one of the last times I was on with you, Adam. Mm-hmm. We all had our fingers crossed that the iPad, whatever it was, we didn't even know what it was. We thought it was going to be a tablet because we heard, I guess, about a month beforehand, there was that piece in the Wall Street Journal that said Apple is working on something. Probably a tablet. We don't know exactly, but it was starting to leak out that it was going to be a tablet. And we all had our fingers crossed that they would come in under $1,000. If they come in at like $1,000 or maybe right under $1,000, then this thing had a chance of really being something. So, I mean, they've moved the needle price wise. Now people look at the iPad and say, oh my God, it's so expensive because I get a tablet for, did you hear HP just announced a $169 tablet? Oh, and I'm supposed to pay $329 for an iPad. We all hoped that they would be under a K.
Right.
So, I mean, they kind of move the needle on price. The only problem is now everybody's undercutting them because they want market share. Apple has never competed on price. The phone is a different thing, though, because it doesn't matter how little you make a Mac cost. You were never going to get one in everybody's hands. If you make a cheap enough iPhone, you win the planet. The planet. India can't afford iPhones with the price that iPhones are right now. Now, they do have this interesting idea. It's called credit. They're actually doing installment plans now in India, but there are still going to be some people who are going to say, well, I don't want to pay for a phone for the next 3 years. There are going to be other people who are going to say, well, I'll go ahead and buy a phone. And if I break the phone, I don't still owe anybody, you know, like for another 2 years because I have a broken phone. Same thing with parts of China, right? I mean, same thing. And those are just the rising countries. I'm not even talking about the countries that are, forgive me for sounding insensitive. It's mostly because I'm being insensitive, dirt poor. If you come out with an iPhone that is really, literally inexpensive, you have a chance of controlling the world in a way that the Mac never had a chance of doing. You actually have a chance of creating consumers that are just completely ignored right now. And if they do that, yes, it would absolutely wreck their margins and it would absolutely probably end up wrecking their stock. But maybe they don't care because they're sitting on $137 billion. Now, do I think that's actually going to happen? No, probably not. But just sitting here talking with you guys, it's the first time I even, you know, thought it seemed like it might be a good idea.
Yeah, I totally understand and see what you're saying. I mean, but what's funny to me or interesting to me, I guess I should say, is that analysts and Wall Street guys and people like that who I guess you assume, I always assume that they're smart people and they know about business and stuff like this, they seem to continue to want to apply a set of rules, and maybe it's because of how they were educated or what they are, to Apple, and it's a set of rules that Apple just really doesn't play the game by. And when it comes to this price thing, what I'm thinking about is the way Apple has dealt with this to date, and that's not to say they're not going to change how they're doing things, but to date the way they've been doing it is doing two things. One, they're bucking this idea that, like you were talking about earlier, where Samsung comes out with a new phone every month or couple months, right? It's got slightly tweaked specs and what have you. What Apple recognizes is that, well, you know what? The iPhone 4S or the 4 are not that old, and they're still pretty darn good phones. And a lot of people really want these, and we can take these and continue to sell them at a lower price point or even at a subsidized free price point. And we can sell a heck of a lot of these to a lot of people who are price conscious. And what I think frustrates some of Apple's competitors is that it's working. And, you know, this last week, I covered this on my show, the strategy analytics piece that came out for fourth quarter handset sales, right? The iPhone 5 was number one, and I forget what the percentage was, but what was more interesting to me was that the iPhone 4S was the second best selling handset worldwide last quarter, 17.4 million units, 8% of the global smartphone shipments. And that's mm-hmm. for Apple's old generation phone.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I mean, go back to the other one that Tim Cook said on the, I think it was the Goldman Sachs thing. I can't remember, but they ran out of iPhone 4s.
Yeah.
The free phone, they could not keep up with demand for, which is, I mean, that's even more stunning to me than the iPhone 4S, you know, selling second, because that's a 2-year-old phone. It doesn't have Siri. I think it has the Retina display.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But I mean, it's decidedly slower. And it doesn't have Siri, which is sort of which a lot of people think could be the next big thing for Apple. I mean, tied into whatever else Apple is going to be doing. That was kind of an amazing thing.
And so that's not to say Apple's not going to hit these emerging markets at one point, but what I think it just seems like, and it makes sense to me, but in all these cases, in expanding the lines into different areas, into hitting different price points and things like that, it seems Apple has always been very smart about not doing that stuff too early. Like waiting and biding their time till they're sure that they've saturated these other options and that, you know what, the only way we can get more phones sold is by figuring out how to bring the price point down. But then the other amazing thing that they always do is they never seem to compromise that quality. So if they're going to do it, they're going to figure out a way to do it that's still going to be this sort of Apple way. And it just, I don't know why that seems like such a mysterious model to anybody else that's in this game. But maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe I'm overanalyzing it.
You know, I think that all of us are overanalyzing it. And the original title for that thing I did for Macworld was called Culture of Fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I really believe that as Mac users that went through the 90s, we all remember,
yep.
You know, there's this memory of when Dell made that statement that everybody's making fun of him for it. You know, there was a grain of truth to it at the time. I mean, the company was in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of magazines were talking about who's going to buy Apple, and it was very conceivable that could have happened, and it didn't. So, but you know, as a culture, and I think we are a culture of these Mac enthusiasts, we don't want that to ever happen again. So whenever you start hearing about stock prices going down or they're not innovating enough or whatever the siren song of the moment is, everybody worries about it. You know, like, oh man, what are we going to do? And so somebody writes, you know, a hit piece about it on the web, and then all of us go click on it, and then they make more money for their website. And there's just a whole weird thing going on. The fact is, there is nothing to worry about. Apple has more money in the bank than most, probably all the other countries in the world put together, it seems. And, you know, it's going to be fine. They're going to make great products, and, you know, there's going to be competitors, and they're going to, as long as they stick culturally to the idea of making really great products, and was it not shipping crap, or what was the word that Tim Cook said?
Right. We won't ship crappy products.
You know, and that's fine. I don't think, frankly, I think the problem where Apple needs to innovate or even just catch up is web-based services. I mean, Siri is great, but they need to have enough servers to make it always work. And, you know, all these, you know, it's almost more software and server-side stuff that I think is where the next big thing needs to come from Apple, and they need to become rock solid. You know, like we never question Google about services like that. I hope right. that Apple gets to a point where we feel the same way.
Yeah, I think they're definitely behind in that area. And so going back to what I was mentioning earlier, you've already mentioned a little bit of it. You know, what do you tell people who come up and ask you about this stuff? You know, why does it all matter? What do you say? Why don't we have to be worried? And, you know, I think I try and tell people or try and get them to understand that those guys are talking about this game that it seems to me that Apple isn't involved in. And that's where they seem to lose sight. I was reading something and someone made a comment, you know, that not all customers are created equal. Apple's customers are a different type of customer, and not different in terms of elitist, but it's just a different sort of market that are buying these products. And Apple knows that, and they know their customers, and they know their core competencies, and they know how to be successful selling to those customers. And that's where they play. So they recognize that they don't necessarily always have to crush every competitor, especially competitors who are playing in that lower end space, in that lower end margin. Apple knows that they're better off thriving in this other space, and that there's plenty of market to go around, right? Until they saturate that. And I think if you look at the current state of Apple's current markets and their current products, they just look at their sales numbers, you know, and their profit margins, you know, they haven't saturated those markets yet. They're still putting in record quarters of earnings. So that's sort of where I fell after looking at all this stuff, is like, where, if you can point to me to the place over the past, you know, getting back to that innovation argument, over the past 37 years that Apple's been doing, 37 years, I think, hopefully I got that right, that they've been doing business, when is the one time that they've truly failed to innovate something in that span? You know, you can point to year after year, certain years where they didn't innovate something, but it's every 3 to 7 years, I was able to find something and point to something that I would say that changed the technology market.
You want to talk about the iPod Hi-Fi?
You can always point to specific products.
Yeah, sorry, I was kidding.
No, but you're right. I mean, they've done some stupid things. They've made some mistakes. And to Tim Cook's point, they've made some crappy products. Remember $99 leather iPhone sleeves or iPod sleeves?
I believe that was actually introduced at the iPod Hi-Fi event.
Yeah, wasn't it? I think that was a pretty bad event.
I believe it was actually the same event. Yeah, that event was surprising.
And the socks, right?
Well, Steve would have never done that. If Steve was around, that would have.
It should also be remembered that happened with Steve Jobs standing on stage going, this is the future of how people are going to listen to the iPod. And look how great this case is. And it really, that felt like a weird day. Like, that was over. And I went back and read all about it again, because I wasn't at that event. But I went back and read all about it again. I was like, really? And there was no one more? All right. Interesting.
Yeah, and we won't talk about that time in the 90s, you know, those sort of dark days that Dave was talking about. Maybe we already talked about those. But, you know, I think that was a case of there was a certain executive team in place that's not the executive team now. Because some people are trying to pull that correlation. I've seen that brought up now, too, right? It's like, well, Apple without Steve Jobs, look what happened in the 90s. You know, it all went to hell.
Oh, I think, you know, the thing, I think all three of us pretty much agree on this whole topic, but the point you were making about them innovating every few years, what I was talking about earlier was, it's not just innovation they want. They want like a hovercraft. I mean, they want something entirely different in the way that the iPhone came out and changed everything. And
I think that's going to happen, though. I mean, that's my case. It's like, give them some time. Give them.
Well, it's not going to happen every couple of years.
No, it's not. No, absolutely not. But it can happen every 5 years.
No, it can't. But it's okay. Eventually, we're going to get to a place where that's not going to happen anymore. I don't think we're there yet, but eventually, we're going to get to a place where that's not going to happen anymore. Because eventually, technology is going to become so ubiquitous that it'll be invisible. And we're going to be happy at that point. I think part of the reason the people who are following Apple, and I'm not talking about you and me, I'm talking about or the people listening to this. I'm talking about Katie Huberty. I'm talking about, you know, I'm talking about Gene Munster. And these are the people who I do honestly think on some level get Apple. They get them a lot more than, you know, a bunch of other analysts out there. But they're still caught up on the thing. And in that little ranting I did earlier when I was talking about how long Apple has been building a system, what Apple's building is a system. And then, you know, they come up with this thing that changes, you know, a whole aspect of your life, but it doesn't not play with the rest of the system. It doesn't not work with the rest of the system. Nokia came out with a Windows phone, and then it turns out the Windows phone that they came out with wasn't going to be able to run the next version of Windows. You'll still get Android devices introduced that might get you to the next version of Android, and then you're done. Now, obviously, the first iPhone is not going to run iOS 6. I don't even think it ran iOS 5. If it did, it didn't run it well. But it's, it, I mean, the whole system thing I mean, eventually it's not going to be about the gadget anymore. And right now people are just getting turned on. General public is just getting turned on. We've just gotten over the tipping point of there are now more smartphones being sold than feature phones or dumb phones. But it's just this year to that tipping point. Eventually we are going to get to a place where it's not going to be about the device, but right now the general public is completely taken with the device because, you know, well, geeks like us have been watching, you know, devices like these for years, evolved for years.
Yeah.
They're just starting to get turned on to the fact that it's a thing. So I don't think we're done with the gizmos and devices yet. But we're going to be one day.
Maybe I think you could argue that they're entering a golden age right now because so many more people are interested in this stuff than before.
Entering a golden age, you mean like golden age of comics kind of thing? Not like Twilight, but entering a golden age like people are like,
I'm saying in terms of
it?
I'm saying in general public adoption, people who before would never have any interest in this stuff, it's a lot bigger deal to a lot more people than it ever was.
And yeah.
Okay. It's interesting you said that because at the Goldman thing, I think Tim Cook made that point in a way as well, you know, because he was asked about sort of the market share and things like that. And he's going, you know, the growth in smartphone sales is just been ramping up. It's sort of what I think you were alluding to, Ken, and what you were talking about is that, you know, there's more people are buying smartphones than ever before, which just means Apple has a bigger market to sell into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yes, they're only targeting a segment of that market. They're ignoring the cheap smartphones, their cheap end of that market, but both ends of that scale are growing vastly, you know, very rapidly. And so by that token, they're still going to sell a heck of a lot more phones. So that's one area where people don't need to be concerned. And so in closing, I do kind of want to move into, so, you know, the sort of stuff we've been talking about, I think we all agree here that aren't really huge concerns, but I think there are some areas where Apple and Dave, your piece, you know, brought this out, I think, very well, that, you know, the cloud services, what they've been doing with iCloud has a lot of great potential, but it seems to me like most of it is yet to be realized, especially in the areas of like document integration. I don't know.
Yeah, I think just in general stability, it needs work. Apple definitely has a different.
Yeah, they had like two or three major outages just this past week, right?
Yeah. And Apple has a very different vision about how cloud documents are going to work in comparison to the traditional, you know, Finder type or Windows Explorer type, you know, paradigm, which is what Dropbox does so well.
Right.
And I don't think that really is all determined yet what's the right version. I know that for the people that are listening to this show, they're probably pretty okay opening the Finder and getting to a Dropbox folder. But I know the vast majority of people out there, from my own teaching experience, that terrifies them. I just had lunch with somebody the other day, an accountant, who said every time I open Windows Explorer, my computer breaks. And she wasn't kidding. You know, she said, I can move one thing in there and everything stops working.
You're right. We can do the Finder thing. We can do the Dropbox thing, and that's fine. And that really, I mean, that's another one that is incredible. I guess it was on the day six that I just released, talked about Skype. I love Skype, and it's a bad product, but I love Skype because you know why? We're doing this right now because of Skype, you know, in ways that we wouldn't have been able to do before. Dropbox is great because there was nothing, I won't say there was nothing like it before. We've always been able to share files online, but Dropbox is great for what Dropbox does. Who wants to do that for the rest of their life, though? I mean, what's going to be much better, the wearable computing idea, the iWatch thing, you know, all of that stuff is still just getting attached to the gizmos. What wearable computing is about to me is no matter where I go, I've either got something on me that has all of my information or that has access to all of my information, but I don't even have to pull it out of my pocket or out of my backpack. I can just walk up to whatever terminal or look at whatever table I'm sitting at and just call up whatever the information is. Do you know what I mean? That to me is like is the cloud vision. And again, that goes back to well, you know, how big is the screen? Well, what's the resolution going to be? Well, no.
Yeah.
No, it's just going to be, and you're just going to, I mean, it's just, I mean, you know, you're wearing something, it could be a pair of pants. It could, I like your idea of the belt, actually, that you mentioned earlier, although I really want it to be a belt buckle because, yeah, I want a big belt buckle that's got all my, that carries my digital me around with me. And then, you know, when I walk up to a terminal at a bus stop or, you know, sit down at the table at the Starbucks, there's me, you know, right there. If yeah. I want it to be on and if I want it to be present to me or if I want to be present to it.
And my point is, I think Apple needs to get better at cloud. So wherever this is going, they got to get better at serving up lots of data. And they don't. It's not easy for them, and it's not through lack of effort. But any cloud service they turn on immediately gets shared with millions, if not billions, of people. So they don't get the chance that like a little successful startup has to figure it out as they go along. It's got to work from day one. And I think they've got better at it, but they still aren't as good as the best players in the game. Yeah. And I hope that they're using a lot of that cash they've got hoarded to get better at that, because I think that's going to be something key for them. But you know, that's just me, but it's a big deal.
I'm with their vision of documents, though, of having your apps be aware, like they are in iOS, of what documents that they manage and can handle, and just having those made available to you through something like iCloud. The problem is in my mind there is Apple has hugely failed on the ubiquity that needs to be in that piece of it. You know, yeah. It works for iWork, and that's pretty much it. And so I don't use it because of that. And guess what? Dropbox works in just about every app that I work with because they've integrated their API and they've done a good job of it. So that is one area where, beyond just making iCloud more robust, in my mind, they really need to start stepping up and working on that. You know, there needs to be an API. Their third-party developers should be opting to use Apple's cloud services instead of, you know, Dropbox, but they've really fallen behind there. And I guess that leads into another thing that's a huge concern of mine recently. I'm going to jump to the end of our notes, but I think, you know, Apple has done a great job with the app ecosystem, and they like to talk about how much they've paid out to developers and yada, 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 how successful that is. But if you go out and actually talk with developers about the relationship with Apple, and Apple's had bad relationships with developers in the past, and that it got a lot better when they started doing the app stuff, but it's starting to also degrade to a certain degree. Apple keeps doing things that are making it harder and harder for developers who they've brought into this ecosystem to sort of sustain what they're doing. App store pricing, and even with how Apple's pricing their own apps, which I think they're undervaluing, I think that's causing problems. This whole sandboxing thing that they've done, while I understand what Apple's trying to do from a security perspective, is really sort of created a lot of strife and hassle for a lot of developers. There's a lot of software that now simply can't be built or at least not built and sold on the App Store the way that, you know, Apple seems to be pushing everybody to. And they're frustrating a lot of the developers that are going to ultimately help keep the ecosystem going. And I think a lot of what Apple depends upon is the seamlessness of the hardware software integration and the ecosystem. So I worry about that a lot. I don't know if you guys have heard some of the same rumblings or have some of the same concerns in that regard.
Well, all of us are, I don't know, speaking for Ken, but I am friends with a lot of software developers, and I know that they're always concerned about that. And I think that is something to be worried about.
Yeah, they all have different concerns, too. I mean, if you talk to them, it goes like anything. I think it goes multiple ways. Some people are very happy. A lot of it depends on what kind of software you're developing, you know, how you feel about sandboxing or not sandboxing or App Store or App Store pricing. A lot of it has to changes with how big your company is and how many employees you have to support. But the end result is that Apple needs to make sure that those guys are being taken care of and feel that they're a part of the community. And more, it seems like what I'm hearing is people who are feeling more separated or alienated from Apple in the community. And it's stemming from a lot of different areas. But that would be something that I would be concerned about, just as a consumer, that, you know, if these developers suddenly can't earn a living and start to go away, well, you know, where does that leave me? I'm going to have this great hardware, but really nothing to do with it. And it gets a little bit back to what we were talking about, where you guys said, you know, and I totally agree with this, that the ultimate thing is that the hardware goes away, right? It's this sort of seamless integrated experience. And it's at that point, it's all about software and services, right?
Yeah. But what kind of apps are you talking about that are getting locked out? Because if you're talking about Apple being a consumer electronics company at this point, which I think it's fairly safe to say they are, they still make great computers and we still like them for the computer stuff mm-hmm. that they do. But I mean, they're pretty much a consumer electronics company at this point. The developers you're talking about, what kinds of things are they making?
Well, what apps do you have on your iOS devices? I mean, beyond iWork and iLife, everything.
Well, no, but I mean, the ones that you're talking about specifically that are feeling hogtied by Apple's changes. I mean, is there a particular kind? Like I know the guys at Secure Mac really don't like a lot of what Apple has done. They can't sell through the Mac App Store because I can't remember. It's been about a year since I talked to them. It was actually the last time at Macworld. They cannot sell their primary product through the Mac App Store. So they sell another product through the Mac App Store and they hope that people find them back that way. Okay. Well, that kind of makes sense to me. But I mean, they're security for the Mac, and the Mac sort of thrives on the idea that you actually don't need security software for the Mac. I know technically Apple says you probably should be running some sort of security software, but they thrive on the idea that you don't need that. So if you're talking about, you know, if you're talking about things besides things that let you, you know, listen to music or watch video or maybe do some word processing or things like that, general consumer is not going to miss what is not allowed to be in the Mac App Store. General consumer is not going to miss what is allowed to be in the App Store. General consumer. I'm not saying everybody. I mean, this goes to the argument about whether or not Apple needs to update the Mac Pro. Apple needs to update the Mac Pro because Tim Cook said Apple is going to update the Mac Pro. Otherwise, as far as I'm concerned, and this will piss off a lot of people, Apple doesn't need to update the Mac Pro. They get a 21.5-inch iMac, they get a 27-inch iMac, and that is enough computer for almost everybody on the planet buying computers. So if you're telling me that there are developers who are upset, but they develop some like really like specialized, geeky, you know, whatever, general consumer is not going to miss that. General consumer is not going to care. And that's who Apple is aiming towards at this point. This goes back to, should Apple go to Macworld or should they not?
Yeah.
No.
I don't want to necessarily name names, because a lot of the conversations I have had have been in sort of confidence, but I can tell you many of the folks that I've talked to, and it's more than one company, and it's a lot of developers, they all have concerns, like I'm saying, different levels of concerns, but all what I would consider to be very valid concerns, and be it sandboxing or pricing or a myriad of other things, distribution, marketing, you know, the game is changing and they're trying to adapt, but at the same time, Apple is not, from what I'm hearing, is not being helpful in a lot of the ways that many of them feel that they could be helpful, mainly in terms of a lot of things that we in the media have known about for a long time. And it tends to be communication on a lot of levels to a certain degree. But I mean, it gets deeper than that. It gets to some real world scenarios. And I will just tell you, it's across a lot of areas. And the concern would be that software, these companies start going out of business and start going away. And we're left with a lot of the lower level applications from, you know, guys working out of their garage. And I have nothing against it. There's great individual developers who are developing amazing bits of software. But to have a thriving software ecosystem, in my mind, you need to have all those levels. You know, you need to have everything from Adobe down. And I don't know, maybe you could argue that the larger developers are becoming less relevant in sort of the iOS kind of space, but I don't know that that's necessarily the case.
I think that's another show.
It is a whole other show. The one thing Ken, you got into the pro market. The one thing I'll tell you on the pro market that concerns me or just absolutely frustrates me, and I feel this for the pro market. I tend to agree with you. I think that an iMac can get you a long way. But at the same time, I don't understand, and it frustrates me that Tim Cook or Apple seems to keep sort of stringing the pro market along, right? Mm-hmm. They're just, they keep dangling the carrot and sort of pulling it along, and yeah, we're going to give you something. But the reality is the Mac Pro hasn't been upgraded since 2010. And so it's like either update it or just tell these guys we're not updating it. But do something. Well, that's what
told them. He told them last year that they were going to update it, though, so they kind of have to now, I think.
Well, yeah. Where is it?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. That seems to me it would be a WWDC thing, but what do I know?
I thought it was first quarter. Didn't he say it was, maybe he didn't say it was going to be in the first quarter. I thought he had said it was going to be in the first quarter, but I had to go back and check on that. I didn't look that up. And I guess the only other thing would be languishing Apple apps. You know, I put on here, I don't know that I have major concerns about those, but I know people have brought it up. The iWork apps, the Pro apps, Aperture, Final Cut. iWork hasn't been updated in a long time. Frankly, iLife apps, you know, really haven't been updated in a long time. So Apple seems to be on a really slow cycle with that. And I don't know if that's their resources being spread too thin, their focus on iOS and OS X to a certain degree, but you know, are they getting out of the software business? Are they going to do something with these products, or do they just feel that they're fine the way they are?
I think with iWork, I'd say that they've done a lot of work on iWork, just on a different platform. I mean, the last several years,
right?
iWork has come a long way on iOS. I mean, now you can track changes in Pages, for instance, and
kind of
a lot,
right?
No, you can track changes in Pages and iPad. I do it all the time, and it converses with the Mac, and when someone gives me a Word document, it works.
Does it work well? It's not a feature that I tend to use on a daily basis, so I.
Well, you know, it's not something most people need, but you know, I think that there was a lot of room to work there. That being said, as an iWork user, I sure would like to get an update on the Mac. I can think of some things I'd like to see them add. So,
right.
And for all I know, tomorrow they're going to have an update. But, you know, 4 years is a long time.
I actually started wondering earlier today if Office 365 and the changes that Microsoft has made to Office for Mac might not be a good time for Apple to do something with iWork. Either just to promote it a bit more, promote more of what it can do, but or actually, you know, upgrade it, because pricing for Office for Mac is just getting stupid now. Yeah, I think they reduce the number of licenses that you can have if you're going to buy it for the home edition, because they're trying to push people to, you know, spend money with this forever and ever. And yeah, don't worry, we'll hold on to your documents.
Somebody was telling me today it's $20 a month with a business license. Mm-hmm. So that's basically a copy of Pages, you know. It's actually more than a copy of Pages for every month. You know?
Right.
Yeah. So, right. You know, I don't know. That seems a little crazy. But, you know, people love their Office. So Microsoft's going to have plenty of customers that do that. But that's also another discussion. For instance, I don't understand why Microsoft never put Office on the iPad, because what's happening is people who swore they could never do anything without Office bought iPads, and now they're doing it without Office, and they're finding out it's really not that hard to do without Office.
I think it depends on how much of a differentiator that becomes for the Surface, RT and the Surface Pro. And if it turns out that those sales actually end up sucking wind once the initial rush for the Surface Pro, especially, because, you know, we keep hearing that, oh, they're sold out of Surface Pros again, but the problem is we don't know how many they shipped, so once those numbers settle down, if that actually ends up being a thing, it is so hard to imagine though that Office for a tablet is going to be like the thing. I would get an iPad, but I want to spend a lot more money, you know, just so I can have Office. If that doesn't really end up pegging the needle, then I would think you would see. I would think that you would see it sometime, maybe towards the end of the year. I would hope, anyway.
Well, who knows?
I don't know. I don't know why I hope, because I'll keep using Pages, but I think just because it's exciting to see something different. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, cool. So we're not doomed, right?
No, we're okay.
In fact, I may be doomed. No, I think we're fine.
One of the points I made in the article in Macworld was if Apple, with the amount of cash they have in the bank today, they could spend $1 million a day and not make a single dollar in profit, and it would take them 356 years to spend all their cash.
That's crazy.
So I think we're okay. And that doesn't include all the other assets they own. So.
Yeah, but they're supposed to give half of it back to their investors, right? Isn't that what we're calling for now?
I don't like to keep up with this stuff because I don't even understand the stock market. So full disclosure, every time I have any interaction with it, it seems to me like it's almost completely random. When Ken was talking earlier, I thought he was going to cite to that article where they had like a group of top-notch investors, a group of second graders, and a group of ducks or something, and they had a system for each one to make their own picks, and the second graders barely, you know, outdid the ducks, and the investors came in third. I don't know. I'll have to look up the article and send it to you. But, you know, it's random to me. But I do think that Apple's going to be just fine. You know, it's not like before, you know, when IT directors were the ones who decided who bought Macs or PCs, you know, 30 years ago. Now people make their own decisions. There's going to be plenty of customers, and, you know, our Macs and iPads and iPhones are going to be here for a long time in the future.
And new iThings, I think, or new Apple things that people just need to give Apple a little longer than 3 years, in my opinion, to show us something.
It's almost all this stuff is, all, you know, giving it more space on the web and giving it more airtime to a certain degree is just adding fuel to the fire. I think for the people listening to this, when you have people talk to you about this in life, I would just say, you know, don't worry about it. It's fine. 356 years, $1 million a day.
Yeah. What I tend to point people to, I think I probably said it before, is the whole system thing. I mean, it is interesting that more people are buying, you know, more smartphones than ever before. But, you know, when they go to buy their next smartphone, when like the current people who are buying their first iPhone go to buy the second, or I'm sorry, when the first people who are buying their first smartphone go to buy their second, that'll be a bit more interesting and a bit more telling.
Yeah. And that is at least partially an argument for Ken's scenario to say, let's find a way to get them in more hands, because once they've bought all the software and they're in the ecosystem, you know, they're not going to want to leave it.
Yeah, it's nice here. I like it.
But, you know, you say that, but then there's plenty of people that have abandoned BlackBerry in the last 2 years.
Yeah, but it was BlackBerry.
Yeah.
It's different over here. All right. Well, I want to thank you both for coming on and helping me think through this a little bit and give a little insight into sort of the craziness that I think has been going on. And, you know, maybe we made a little sense of it. Maybe we confused people a little bit, but hopefully we just got people thinking a little bit more rationally about it, or being able to, like I said, or like I tried to do, step back a little bit and see it from different angles. So that's why I wanted to get you guys on, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time. So if you want to, let's start with you, Ken, if you want to let people know who aren't familiar with you, where they can find you and what you're up to and all that sort of stuff.
I do a daily Apple news related to Apple news podcast called macOS Ken, available at macosken.com or of course on iTunes at macOS Ken. And then I just turn up other places from time to time.
Like here. And Dave, I will have a link for everybody to your piece in the show notes, along with a couple other reference pieces that I used for sort of setting up my show notes for this piece. But beyond writing for Macworld these days, what are you up to and where can people find you?
You know, if you just go to MacSparky.com, you're going to get way too much of me. Just go there. You'll find it all.
And check out the field guides, too.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a plug for those because those are great.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun doing those, and that's my thing. So, yeah, those are also at maxsparky.com.
Great, great ebooks. All right. Thanks, guys. So there you go. I don't know about you, but I feel better just having talked that out. I also feel better knowing that I think the MacCast is going to be around for much, much longer. I believe those two guys when they say we've got nothing to worry about. And so I hope that helped ease your mind a little bit. And with that, that's going to do it for the episode for this week. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You can check out their software as well as get free trials over at circusponies.com. Smile, check out Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, also Text Expander Touch for iPhone or iPad, as well as PDF Pen for iPad. You can get more information and details at smilesoftware.com. GoToMeeting by Citrix. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and be sure to use the promo code MACCAST. Gazelle, the fast, simple way to sell your used iPhones, iPads, MacBooks, and other smartphones. Find out what your gadget is worth today at gazelle.com. Squarespace, the beautiful and intuitive website publishing platform that allows anyone to create professional web pages, blogs, online stores, and galleries all on a single platform. Try it free, no credit card required. Just go to squarespace.com/MACCAST now. Plus, when you purchase a new account, you can get 10% off when you enter the offer code MACCAST to everything you need to create an exceptional website. ShareFile by Citrix. Take all the hassle out of sharing and sending your business files via old methods like email attachments and FTP with ShareFile. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter my offer code MACCAST. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. Big thank you to you for your support. I'm sure many of you have some comments, feedback on what we talked about on this episode. If you have that or a question or a comment for a future episode, you can send your emails to maccast@gmail.com or call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave voicemail there. You can also leave voicemail on Skype. The Skype address is the MacCast. And if you'd like show notes, links to anything that we talked about in this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the MacCast website at maccast.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. That'll do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.